Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah. Well, well, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen, happy Friday. Thank God. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. So, I was privileged enough last month to run into someone that give us the ABCs and the 1-2-3s and give us a regular update on the economy. So, I am privileged and happy to welcome back Ms. Paul Shelton from Warwick Shores. Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing today?
I'm very well. Thank you so much. And thanks for agreeing to come back to the torture chamber here. Anyway, how have things been with you?
Things have been good. No complaints at all. We saw a good month in the markets in April. So that's always positive when we see good performance from the capital markets.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so. The little bit of rundown of what we've noticed last month and what we've witnessed is on the geopolitical landscape, the trade talks between the U.S. and China, they improved significantly. And a deal is expected sometime this quarter, which is good. And that keeps a lot of nervous tensions and volatility away from the markets in that respect. China's economy, which had appeared to be slowing, reported positive GDP numbers for the first quarter, which reverses a lot of fears of global slowdown that were expected. Domestically, the U.S. economy grew at a rate of 3.2% in the first quarter, you know, which caught many economists by surprise who were predicting more modest growth in the wake of the trade war and the government shutdown that we experienced at the end of last year going into the first part of this quarter. So, and corporate earnings thus far this week was the largest group of the S&P 500 reported earnings this week. So I think we're somewhere through 335 to 340 companies that have reported thus far for the first quarter earnings. And out of that 300 and change, about two-thirds of them, you know, beat their quarterly estimates, which is always a positive sign and points towards continued growth of the economy. One of my favorite economic indicators was released this morning, and it's my favorite because I believe it gives us a true barometer of where, you know, we are in the economic cycle and where we're going and how the economy is truly moving along. And that was the jobs report that was released this morning at 8:30 a.m. And for the month of April, our economy added 263,000 jobs, dropping the unemployment rate to 3.6%, which is the lowest that we've seen since about December of 1969, so almost 50 years. We're at the lowest rate we've seen. And the expectation was that we would see an increase of about 190,000 jobs. So we surpassed that, and also the unemployment rate was expected to be at 3.8%. So, you know, we fully surpassed that as well. There were a couple things that led to that, though. So the participation rate ticked down slightly to 62.8%. So participation is the number of abled workers age 16 to 65 in the economy that are actively looking for work. So that doesn't include any discouraged workers or any of those that are underemployed that are in the labor market. So, and I'll get back to more of the on the unemployment report in a little bit, but just want to highlight a few more areas of the economy that, you know, we noticed in April. From a market performance standpoint, the S&P 500 returned 3.9% in the month of April, which takes the year-to-date return to 17%. The Nikkei 225, which is an index that looks at Japanese equities, produced a return of just under 5% for the month, and their year-to-date return is 11%. And a similar theme was seen in the Hang Seng Index, which measures Chinese equities. They had a return of 2%, a little over 2% in the quarter, and their year-to-date return is 14%, just about 15% for the year. So we're seeing strength across the equity markets, not just domestically, but across the globe, which is always a good thing. And that helps peel back, you know, some of the concerns that we had initially at the beginning of the year of a global slowdown possibly leading, you know, to a recession here domestically and further turmoil off the coast of the U.S. And lastly, one of the things that, you know, we've been focusing on as a firm is the monetary policy. So the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee met this week, and as a result of their meeting, the decision was made to maintain the current monetary policy stance, not increasing nor decreasing interest rates. So the target rate range is maintained at 2.25% to 2.5%. And one thing to note about this was approved in a unanimous vote. So that means that all the board governors are in agreement with the current stance of the economy at this point, which is a great thing. There's no dissension. Some want to be more dovish or some want to be more hawkish. So that's always good when we have that unity on the FOMC. Now the biggest question is when will the Fed be encouraged to make its next move? So we are in late cycle, in the late stage of this bull market. So what takes place next? What will happen in our economic data that will allow the Fed to say we need to increase interest rates or we need to decrease interest rates? So that's something that we'll be looking forward to along the road going into the summer months. But one of the positive things that we've seen thus far is the yield curve is still upward sloping. It is flatter than it was a year ago, but it's still upward sloping, and it doesn't appear that it's going to invert anytime soon. And once again, anytime the yield curve inverts, you typically have a recession sometimes thereafter. And also, in addition to that, the yield curve being positive, interest rates remain fairly low across all maturities of the curve, and that's very accommodative for consumer spending of large purchases like houses and automobiles.
Okay. So you put a lot out there. So let me see if I can break some of this down. And I really do want to talk about the whole jobs thing, because I think it's a little bit more complex than just, oh, we've got the lowest rate than we've had in 50 years. When you talk about people, let's say, not reporting that they're out of work, for example, is there a time period, like 3 months or something like that, before that person's considered being out of the job market and is not being counted as part of the job market? Can you talk about that?
Well, typically what they look for in counting the ones that are in the job market are those that are applying for unemployment insurance. So there is some error in all statistical analysis. There is some belief that there are employees that are laid off from there's a shutdown of a factory for some reason, and they do not immediately seek unemployment insurance, whether it be they may have a spouse that's working, so they're temporarily not actively looking, or they may have other sources of income. Or, you know, one of the trends that we've seen, I would say, over the last 20 years is that there's been a cyclical shift in our employment landscape, which has caused, you know, a lot of people with the technology age to shift more towards early retirement. So there are a few fundamental, you know, facets of what's built into that participation rate, and that kind of sheds the light on, are these employees, are these workers, are individuals truly unemployed at this moment? Are they discouraged? Are they just underemployed? You know, so there's some grayness around that area there.
Now, also, too, when you talk about the unemployment rate, the jobs rate, are you talking about major corporations? Are home-based or small businesses included in any of this? Because if you have a home-based business, sometimes it's kind of hard to, the filing of taxes and all that is a lot different than if you were working for someone, you had a regular 9-to-5.
Correct. It is different. And a lot of times for different industries, if you're in a commission-based industry, that's looked upon differently as well, whether or not it's considered unemployed or underemployed at the present moment. So this employment rate that was released today, it does include all business sizes, I should say. It goes from small businesses, 1 to 49 employees, and then the mid-sized business, which will be up to the 500-employee range, and then large businesses up through there. It also encumbers, it breaks down various subsectors within the employment rate. So you'll have, I believe, in this last month, one of the sectors that saw the largest retractions of employees was the retail sector. So it retracted by 12,000 workers in that particular sector.
And that's kind of been happening for a while, correct?
That has been happening for a while. And part of that could be cyclical. Coming off the holiday season, you typically see a pullback in hiring in the retail sector. And then also going to the summer season, you may see a slight pick up, but typically what we've noticed is a lot of the graduations, which are taking place now, college graduations are taking place, and people are leaving a lot of retail jobs and actually stepping to some of those jobs that they've been studying for the last 4 years and getting into their industry.
Okay. And then also temporary jobs or part-time jobs, are they included in any of those numbers? Because you do have an uptick in those types of jobs during the summer because either teachers are out for the summer or either students are looking for a summer job to tie them over. So I just was curious if that was included in any of that.
It is included. So you do have the temporary and the seasonal jobs, seasonal employment, that is included in the numbers. And that's why it becomes lumpy sometimes in certain times of the year, especially around the holidays. A lot of, retail picks up heavily from in the latter quarter of the year, in October through December, hiring for the Christmas rush. So it does include that number there.
Okay. All right. The other thing I wanted to ask you about in terms of jobs is we see, I can't say a trend yet, but we do see every now and then recently someone saying that they're going to increase the minimum wage in their company, and there's this push to increase minimum wages to at least to what they're calling living wages. And so what I wanted to ask you, is that going to impact this job market in terms of the way it stands?
So the increasing of minimum wage on a global stance across the whole country, or just company by company, sector by sector? Because I believe it was last week or recently, I believe it was Disney, or one employer announced that they were going to raise the wage for their employees. If it's done, I believe, on a secular level, just, very local to to one company, it has the potential to impact that local economy. But it won't significantly, carry through and change much for the economy as a whole when you look at the whole United States. Now, if there is legislation that is passed that increases the minimum wage on a nationwide standard, then, you will see a shift in some things. Many economists believe that it will lead to more inflationary pressure being placed into the economy, and just driving prices even higher, and that there still will be some level of subsistence level within the economy. But, that's just to be debated you know, through statistics and finance, through history, and what we've seen in the past.
Okay. All right. So we've got our update, and we talked a little bit about jobs. We're going to talk a little bit more about the economy when we come back. We are here with Paul Shelton of Warwick Shores. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you have questions for Paul, the number is 516-387-1944. That's 516-387-1944. Or if you've got some sort of comment or some insight that you want to share, you know, don't hesitate to call us. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good morning, and welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today here with Paul Shelton, Jr., who is with Warwick Shores. He is the chief financial advisor. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about in locally here, you know, tourism is a very big deal in terms of the economy and stuff like that. And I was curious that do you notice, how do I put this, an impact when there are, let's say, terrorist situations going on in other countries that affects the tourist economy here locally?
I think any time that you do have any uncertainty or volatility or terrorism in any country, no matter where it is on the globe, it does, you know, tend to affect tourism, you know, everywhere, domestically, locally, and abroad. I know, you know, outside of just the, you know, the terrorism aspect of effect on tourism, one of the things that, you know, we noticed in the market somewhat slightly is with Boeing and the issues they've had with the Boeing 737 MAX, you know,
right,
the two crashes that took place. And we've seen some hesitation around traveling. And it's still up in the air on how consumers will respond once all of those airplanes are fully back in the air and fully operational again, and once that fleet is no longer grounded. So those things tend to drive fear of travel, and you know, those are things that we pray that don't hold us back from living the full potential of our lives and enjoying our everyday lives, but they definitely do have an effect on us.
Okay, all right. So, what other things, and we've talked about jobs, what other things should we have been paying attention to last month and that made some, I guess, significant changes in the economy?
Well, there's a few other things that are out there, and just before we leave the jobs number, I do want to highlight a couple other statistics. One other thing,
okay,
and that's a breakdown of the unemployment rate by race. And, you know, when you break it down by Hispanic, Asian, and African American, respectively, you see a 4.2%, 2.2%, and a 6.7% level of unemployment. So in the Hispanic community, it's a 4.2% level of employment. Asian is 2.2%, and African American 6.7%. So we're consistently seeing a larger amount of African Americans that are unemployed are falling to this unemployment number, as opposed to other races, other nationalities. right now the Asian, I think, population at 2.2% is maybe the lowest that it's been in quite some time, and it's actually lower than the national average of all employed workers. Now, part of that is the population of Asians in this country, but it is still a positive sign for the Asian community. The same for the Hispanic community. That number has dropped significantly too, which is good. The number, you know, believe it or not, has dropped for the African-American community as well. And one thing that I take pride in looking at this number or looking at these statistics is seeing that there is an increasing amount of diversity. When you look at the numbers over a long time frame, there is an increasing amount of diversity that isn't filtering through, you know, our workplace and through our employers on a national level. So I always like to look at that as one little last caveat whenever I look at the employment numbers, just to see how everything is spanning out fully across all, you know, sectors of the economy as well. As far as any other thing that we've noticed throughout the month, you may have noticed when you went to the gas stations that the prices jumped a little bit. We did have a surge in crude oil prices at the barrel, which translated to the pump for consumers. Toward the latter part of the month and so far early part of this month, we've seen a pullback from the recent highs and currently trading around $62 per barrel in crude oil. And that pullback will provide some relief for consumers at the pump, but we really have strong economic data, and corporate and consumer demand will more than likely prime oil to increase heading to the summer month. And that will provide upward, you know, momentum possibly for prices. So, you know, where we're seeing gas prices at right now, I fully believe that from here through, you know, more than the summer months, through that summer travel period, it may be at this level or maybe slightly higher, unless there is something that takes place legislatively that affects oil prices to go a different direction. The one good thing about rising oil prices like that is, and this is something that I mentioned last month on our call, is the U.S. is a big player in oil shale production now. So as prices of oil do rise, it is not just a benefit for OPEC anymore or the Middle East countries as we were so familiar with back in the 1990s. But right now, as oil prices rise, it really benefits the United States as well.
You know, you were talking about gas, and I'm, you know, you're talking about it jumping up, but it's been kind of doing this up and down thing now for, it seems, the last couple of months. You know, 1 week it seems like it's like maybe around here, I think I've seen like 279 this week, and then another week it drops down to in the 250s or something like that, and it seems to be this kind of back and forth situation. Is there any stabilizing that you see occurring anytime soon?
Nothing stabilizing from a downward perspective, unfortunately. I mean, our economy is really strong, and a lot of times when we see large shifts like that in a local area, like in the gas stations that we're typically used to and driving by on a daily basis, those are often influenced by any state legislation that may have taken place, whether there's a half-cent increase in you know, oil or gas taxes or anything like that that may fluctuate, you know, seasonally throughout the period. Looking at it on a global stance, on a global basis, there's really nothing that is out there currently that will make oil prices pull back or subside back to, you know, around the $50 range. I mentioned we're just above $62 on light sweet crude oil right now, and that's where our benchmark is for our gas prices here in the United States. So there's really nothing out there. No production concerns or anything out there, no overproduction concerns that will allow gas prices to really pull back. And typically what we see is during the summer months, there are a lot more cars on the road, people traveling to see grandma and, you know, and all those exciting things that take place. So that typically increases demand for oil. So if anything, what we may see is a drawdown on the the storage of supply, which would, you know, put pressure, upward pressure on prices.
Okay. Something else I wanted to ask you with regards to gas prices, and I don't know if you can speak on it or how comfortably you want to speak on it or whatever, but I want to talk about the gas prices being more on certain sides of town than others, and what is the rationale behind that?
I haven't noticed that. Now, I know that gouging always takes place, even when it's illegal not to do so. Gouging does take place, and what I've learned is a lot of times, many of the gas stations that are right near Orlando International Airport are also near car rental agencies. And those there's a few gas stations over there that prices are astronomical. I mean, they're like $2 or $3 above what the neighboring gas station a mile away is, and they're paying a fine daily for gouging those prices. But they keep the prices high because there's many tourists that have to return to rental cars with a full tank, and when they're driving, they see this gas station and they just pull right in there, and they end up paying a higher price.
It's more worth it to them to pay the fine and charge the higher price than not pay the fine. So whatever they're gouging people at, it must be pretty exorbitant in order to cover the cost of the daily fine as well as make a profit.
Correct.
That's
right.
That's not good. That's messed up. But I wasn't even really talking, to be honest, I wasn't even really talking about the tourist district. It's unfortunate, but you kind of almost expect it. So it's like if you're renting a car, you kind of gas up somewhere else before you get close and then top it off when you get close. But I'm just even talking about, for example, I live in one part of Orange County and my husband works in another part of Orange County. And where he works, the gas prices are usually lower than near where we live. We have the fortunate advantage of having a Sam's Club membership where we're able to get gas at Sam's, and usually that kind of helps it a lot. But otherwise, you can almost count on the gas prices being lower on the side of town where he works versus where we live. And so that's what I was kind of, referring to.
Gotcha. No, and fortunately, you know, I take advantage of the Sam's Club, you know, membership with gas as well, too. And that's just truly much cheaper in that respect. I haven't noticed I haven't really been made aware of much of the difference between, I guess, different geographical areas or different economical areas of the city. Different regions having more or expensive gas or less expensive gas. So I probably wouldn't be the best to speak to that one as of now, but that's something that I definitely will look into. Hopefully maybe provide an economic update, you know, with that our next time we get together.
Okay. All right. Sounds like a plan. So anyway, I want to take a quick break, and then when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit more about you have a newsletter about Onward and Upward that talks about investing. So I'd like to ask you a few questions about that when we come back. So we're speaking with Paul Shelton Jr., who's with Warwick Shore Advisors. He's the Chief Investment Officer. Sorry, I got the title wrong before. Chief Investment Officer. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. The number, if you want to call in, is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. And we will be right back.
Hi, I'm Gretchen Depp Simmons with Farrell Realty, but you know me as G from G's Power Hour.
Much of the time when I'm not engaging with you on my show, I'm dealing in real estate in beautiful Central Florida. But because I'm here, that doesn't mean I can't help you wherever you are. So if you're looking to buy, invest, relocate, rent, or sell, please give me a call at 407-968-9387. That's 407-968-9387, and let me help you with your real estate needs.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs. Dedicated to serving our families.
Good afternoon. Good Friday afternoon. Amen. Welcome back to Jesus Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us this beautiful Friday. And we are pleased to welcome back Paul Shelton Jr., who is with Warwickshire Advisors. He's the chief investment officer there. And you have something for investors called Onward and Upward. Can you talk about the newsletter?
Yes. So monthly, I produce a economic update that I provide to my clients, and I post it on the website as well, so it's open to the general public. And I take a dive each month into a pressing issue, either something that I hear from a current client or something that I hear out in the media that's a pressing topic, and I try to dive in on a monthly basis and give more color around each one of those situations. And this particular month, Onward and Upward is the segment of Market Insight that came about. And it's truly just speaking to the dynamics of the market. We continue to move onward and we continue to move upward. And dating back, you know, doing some research all the way back to the 1920s, research that was conducted by Eugene Fama and Kenneth French, who are, you know, two historians, great historians of my industry. They have projections and they show where the U.S. equity markets have rewarded investors since the 1920s. Now, you think about that, going back to the 1920s, that encumbers the Great Depression and also encumbers the Great Recession and all the wars and everything in between. But nonetheless, even through all of those moments of volatility, the markets have still rewarded investors by staying invested and by continuing to invest. And that's one of the things that's ever present right now, as we've seen in recent market highs in the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, that we're continuing to move onward and we're continuing to move upward in the market. So one of the core tenets and beliefs that I have and I share with my clients is to fully stay diversified, fully diversified that's, you know, acceptable to your level of risk. But whatever you do, continue to invest and stay invested in the market. One of the things that happened in the fourth quarter of last year is we saw a tremendous amount of volatility in the fourth quarter, where we went into correction territory. And for many those on the call, a correction is, you know, defined by a 10% or more move in the market. So typically you denote that with a 10% downward move, but in essence you can have a 10% upward move and it can be a positive correction as opposed to a negative correction going to a downward move. But what we saw from October, you know, until about, you know, Christmas Eve of 2018 was a significant downward move in the equity markets across the board and across the globe. And since that time, we've seen a tremendous resurgence of those equity markets. So many people saw the volatility that we experienced in October, November, and December and felt that this was the time to sell, this is the time to get away, to run away from the markets, reallocate away from equities and to reallocate into fixed income or something more safer, investments, only to realize that in January the market turned around and is now making new highs. So, you know, this paper, you know, kind of speaks to that and on a brief basis. And I always like to keep it high level on the market update, and then when I get one-on-one or personal, you know, with the client, then I'm able to speak with that personal situation that we can take that conversation much deeper.
So let me ask you, why are there seems to be some naysayers out there. I was just looking at something that CNN had posted, I guess yesterday or day before yesterday, I think, that the U.S. economic outlook isn't as strong as you think. What are they basing their perspectives on?
I didn't get a chance to see that exact report or the statistics that they're looking at that's basing that decision. But if I were to guess, I would say one of the things that they're probably looking at may be housing over the last, 18 to 20 months. New housing starts specifically have been a little bit lower, and they've been on a downward trend over that time period. And additionally, typically when housing is going down and at the same time you have interest rates or a yield curve that's flattening and near inversion, you are primed for a recession. Now, the one thing that typically happens, and we hear it a lot, see it a lot in media, that you will have a Fed-induced recession, is that whenever, the economy is doing well, like it is now, the Federal Reserve would exacerbate the issue by increasing, interest rates to a point that's not sustainable. And then you'll have an automatic shift that comes very quick in the economy and causes a downtrend that the Federal Reserve is unable to cut rates quick enough to catch up to. Right now, where we are in our economy, the Federal, Chairman Jerome Powell has stated that he's content with the economic data and that there's no reason to increase or decrease interest rates. So with having the Federal Reserve on board and really recognizing where we are in the late cycle of this bull market, but still possibly some room to grow and move up, is a positive for the economy. So I believe if I were one of the naysayers that believe that the economy was due to fall off a cliff in the next day or two, I would have to hang my hat on, the current stance of the yield curve and possibly the housing data. But those are two catalysts, although worth noting, but they're only two catalysts, two parts of the equation. There are so many different economic indicators out there right now that says that the economy is charging along in a very strong manner. And we've seen a shift in that data over the last 2 months. If we would have had the same conversation about November timeframe when the Federal Reserve was increasing interest rates or were in a more of a tightening policy, I would have felt a lot more of those fears about the recession coming up. But as of today, I just don't see it, definitely not this year and definitely not through the first half of 2020.
I want to go back to something that you talked about in terms of, again, it seems as though African Americans are being left when everybody else is celebrating, oh, how great everything is. African Americans seem to be getting left behind again. When we look at that, I guess what I'm going to ask you is probably something that we probably will talk about in another time. So I'm just going to say right now, what I'd like to look at at some future date is, maybe trends in terms of it, because I know you can't answer all of this right now, but where African Americans have benefited the most, where they look like they're reaping the fruits of the economic benefits that are out there, and then, what maybe is the reason that they don't benefit. I know for one thing right now, being a realtor, they keep talking about how there's fewer the home ownership rate is declining, which there's so many, I guess, resources out there. I keep talking to different people, there are resources out there if you want to take advantage and become a homeowner. Becoming a homeowner is it helps you in so many ways economically, But there seems to be just, I guess, a hesitancy. And, you know, I know the responsibility is great, but the benefits, I guess, to me, outweigh a lot of the risk. But do you think that decline in home ownership might be part of the reason that we don't see the African-American community benefiting from, you know, this economic uptick?
I think it's definitely a vital part of it. Historically, land has been the one asset that doesn't depreciate, land itself. Now, when you improve land, that improvement on top of the land can depreciate. But when you take away, when you subtract home ownership, which is one of the largest parts or the largest parts of the pie of wealth for any family, you significantly reduce your overall wealth currently as it is in today's stance, and your overall future wealth attaining ability in the future. So I definitely am a proponent of owning, you know, home ownership, owning land, and allowing that to be a vital asset in your overall portfolio. Now, I deal with investing on the market, but I always consider, you know, my clients, you know, real estate holdings when I'm building out their portfolio for the market, because your real estate is truly an asset that can mitigate a lot of inflation risk that you can, you know, have from equities in a portfolio. And if it's used appropriately, and if you have rental properties, it can also be a source of income which could subsidize any areas of low yield in a portfolio as well. So I'm a huge proponent for home ownership, and I believe that when you have the home ownership and when you have the education on how to structure your asset and how to use that home as an asset and view it as an asset and not a liability, then it does tremendous things for your overall wealth picture.
And I'm glad you said that, because I think back to when I was I had a job when I was during a summer, one of my summers when I was out of college, and had looked at this piece of land on Kirkland and was like, I'd like to buy that. How would I buy that? And I guess I was talking to a friend of mine, and her father had just did some real estate investment, and he was like, oh, you don't want to buy that because, you know, you're going to have to pay taxes on it every year and you don't have. But, you know, and now I think back on, and so I got talked out of it. But now that I look back on it, it's like you can have vacant land and actually taxes on vacant land, because I've had some vacant property since. Taxes on vacant land aren't that expensive, you know, is when you start to do the improvements and stuff like that. But taxes on vacant land itself, depending on where it is and, you know, what it's for and all that type of stuff, are not that expensive where a young person couldn't just go ahead, if they saw a property that they want, to go ahead and purchase the land. And even if they don't build on it themselves, there may come a point in time, as with the last piece of property I had, where someone else wanted it for some particular reason and it was more valuable to them. And so even if you buy the land and don't necessarily build on it right away, it may be something for you down the road, and or it may be something that someone else has more interest in later. And the paying the taxes on it is minimal in terms of what the return could be down the road. So I had to throw that out there. But anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. Very true. Very good point.
Yeah. So we're going to take a break, but what I want to ask you is coming up, what things that we need to look for with, you know, one of the questions I did have in terms of it is what's going on in Venezuela, you know, and I look at some of the political stuff that's going on, what type of impact those types of things politically are having on the economy. So I want to ask you a couple of questions about that when we come back. We are with Paul Shelton Jr. He is with Warwick Shore Advisors. This is G's Power Hour. I never had so good entertainment. If you want to call in and ask a question, the number is 516-387-1944, and we will be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs, owner and funeral director at Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community with two generations of family funeral service. With the recent addition of my son Brandon, we are here to take care of the needs of Central and West Orlando. From simple cremation to a full burial, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here to help you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been two decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the arc with you. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on KHAM Radio.
Are you chilling?
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks for being with us today. Here with Paul Shelton Jr., who is with Warwick Shores Advisors. And I wanted to ask you about what's going on in Venezuela. It's still somewhat fluid. They're trying to solidify what's going on in terms of the leadership over there. And we seem to have taken a huge interest in that. We also have, we're still kind of, I would say, holding our breath to find out what Korea's going to do and whether or not we're going to go back to the table to talk with them. You mentioned China earlier. What does this do in terms of what we experience as average Joe here in the United States?
Well, there is a handful of geopolitical events that are taking place around the globe, you know, right now. Some are getting more attention than others, and it seems like whenever, you know, a hot trigger or a hot button is pushed on one particular issue, that's when all the media outlets will cover it and cause a little hysteria about it. Last year, one of the biggest things that took place was the summits between Kim Jong-un of North Korea and President Trump, and a lot of back and forth. You know, North Korea were doing a lot of missile tests, you know, firing missiles into the Pacific Ocean, shooting them over Japan, and doing a lot of things that are against the Geneva Convention. And since then, you know, I think President Trump has met twice, I believe, with Kim Jong-un, and all of that has kind of subsided. It hasn't been resolved, which is the biggest thing that I like to point out, you know, that to my clients is there is still potential geopolitical risk and headline risk from that, you know, flaring up again. A lot of times, just because you don't see the smoke, it doesn't mean that there is not a fire there. So even though there's no headlines or there's no news or anything taking place out of North Korea at this moment, doesn't mean that that won't change in the near future or intermediate future. Same is true with Venezuela, which we're seeing a lot more action out of Venezuela right now. And, you know, I'm not as intimately up to date on Venezuela as I am on North Korea, but I do know that there is pretty much a civil war. It seems like it's breaking out now, where you're having a fight over the office of the president. You know, pretty much there's a president that is, that has been named or I guess voted on, and then there's one leader that is being recognized by 50 different countries, one of those including the U.S. and the U.K. and most Latin American nations are recognizing, you know, the opposition leader who is currently not in the office right now. Some of the big ramifications that are coming about from that are that could affect us in the U.S. from that is in the oil markets. Now, Venezuela historically has been one of the larger producers of oil and has been dating back all the way, I believe, into the 1960s and 70s. A lot of turmoil and recent uprising and a lot of social events that have taken place in Venezuela has shifted a lot of that, and with the U.S. becoming more of a shale producer, the reliance on oil from Venezuela and some of the natural resources that they have in Venezuela has been tapered off. That's partially some of the reason of the uprising that they're having down there now. So I think from an economic standpoint, there will not be a significant impact to our local economy here from everything playing out in Venezuela, at least on the surface as what we see now. As everything continues to play out, you know, we'll provide more clarity on that and be able to see how it all plays out. But I believe the biggest issues on a geopolitical standpoint to really worry about, I guess in the near-term future, would be China and whether a trade deal will be struck between China and the U.S. or not. Right now, the markets are pretty much pricing in that a trade deal will be done on some principle, exactly what that will be. But we are expecting that something will transpire. Now, if for whatever reason this quarter passes, next quarter passes, and there is no deal and talks break down and we go back to slapping tariffs on each other, then we'll see increased volatility return back into our trading markets again. And that may not be the best thing for asset prices going into the latter part of the year or into the earlier part of next year.
Okay. So keeping an eye on China for sure. We actually probably have needed to do that for a while. I mean, beyond just the tariffs, if you just look at how what we purchase, made over in China, and how little we end up seeing purchase made in America goods. I think that has a big impact as well, but it's just we're not big. Hopefully, we're getting better. I'm trying to get better, but we're not big on the label looking. We want what we want, and we get what we what we want, and we don't necessarily weigh the consequences far beyond this is what I want. So
correct. And a lot of it, initially started. Well, we had a large resurgence to outsource a lot of things, to China, outsourcing a lot of manufacturing. And that's just one of the things that you have that takes place with a developed economy like the U.S. In the 1920s and 1930s, during the Industrial Revolution, we were more of a manufacturing economy at that time, and we were emerging at that time. Since then, we have shifted to more of a service-based economy on a nationwide stance. We provide more service than manufacturing. So it's natural that if we're more of a service-based economy, more of our manufacturing is going to take place outside of our shores and be done for us. So we're just outsourcing that responsibility to another country. The negative thing that took place was in order for us to be able to have that benefit to outsource to China was taking a lot of our intellectual capital and using it against us by creating their own products side by side with our products and reselling them under their name using our technology. So that was one of the things that is the undercurrent for the current trade war that's taking place right now. But yeah, China is definitely something that, like you said, we should have kept an eye on or been more attentive to maybe even 30 years ago, 20, 30 years ago. But we'll see what comes out of it over the course of this next quarter.
Okay. So the next quarter, just tell us what we should be looking out for in the next month. Sometimes we got to take it a little bit by a little bit. So.
Yeah. Definitely. So month to month, I always look at, again, my favorite economic indicator is the jobs report. So, and it's always released on the first Friday of each month for that previous month. So that'll come out early June, the first Friday in June for the month of May.
Okay.
I'm very very interested to see what the reading will be on that number. One thing that we didn't have in February was a really, really low number. And that number was, you know, I believe a little over one or two standard deviations below the typical mean of what we've been seeing. It was significantly lower than what was expected. Since then, that number was revised up slightly. So it turned out to be a little bit better, but it still was slow, and it caused a lot of fears, or enhanced a lot of fears at that time for a recession. So the employment numbers are really, when you analyze everything from an economic standpoint and for an investment standpoint, you look at it on a rolling three-year average or a rolling three-month average basis. So I'm curious to see what the May numbers look like to fill in the gaps for that March and April, for that three-month rolling period there. Additionally, personal spending and personal consumption. I'm looking at those numbers, which will be coming out later in the next week. So personal spending shows how much we're spending on discretionary items. And those are the things that are non-necessity. So those are going out to dinners, buying the Cokes, buying all those other things, going out to the shopping malls, and all the discretionary spending.
Going to see Avengers multiple times, y'all.
Yeah.
You're helping someone else's economy.
So seeing an increase in personal spending is always always a positive. And what we saw last month is a slight increase in personal spending and also a slight increase in PCE, which is the Personal Consumption Index, Expenditures Index, the PCE stands for. And that means that prices slightly increased over that time period. And when you strip out, you know, food and energy, the core part of that, prices still slightly increased. So that's saying that we are seeing natural organic inflation in our economy, which is good to see. You don't want to see traditionally just Federal Reserve-induced inflation, because that's what typically could lead to overinflation. Negative aspects of the company, but when you see organic inflation, that's always a positive.
Yeah. I mean, the less you can keep them out of it and just have things grow on their own, it's better.
Correct.
So, how can we contact you? If anyone has any additional questions or wants some information or needs some advice?
You can reach me via phone at 407-493-6288. You can visit our website at warwickshore.com. That's warwickshore.com. And you can send us an email at investments@warwickshore.com. And that's investments with an S at warwickshore.com.
Paul, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time with us again this month. Look forward to catching up with you again next month.
Thank you so much. I always enjoy it.
Thank you. Have a blessed weekend.
Thanks. You too.
And thanks. Now, before we go, I want to tell you, you know, we usually have our mortgage person on Monday. So Jabir will be on with us Monday. And we're going to talk about a couple of programs. If you are a senior and have reverse mortgages, a program that you need to know about that's coming to an end pretty soon, within the next couple of months. So want you to listen in on that. Plus, June, I know we're in May. I know we just got started in May, but June is National Home Ownership Month. Now, and I really want you all to start thinking about the possibilities of home ownership, because, like I said, there are a lot of options out there. So we're going to talk about the ABCs of getting ready to purchase whatever is out there. So we're going to talk about that with Jabir on Monday. Plus, because I want to try to get some of you into a house. I would say not just me, but yeah, I really would like to, but there's others out there, other realtors, that would like to help you find the perfect home for yourself by the end of June. Wouldn't you like to have a house that you've closed on during National Home Ownership Month? So let's get you started on that. So we're going to talk about the ABCs of that on Monday. Also, it's Teacher Appreciation Week next week, and there's a special teacher program for those teachers that are looking into purchasing a house. I know they're just trying to get through the end of the school year, but it's a good time also to start thinking about yourselves and you know, getting ready for a home purchase as well. But we will have other things on during Teacher Appreciation Month. And also, don't forget, Mother's Day is coming up, not this Sunday, but next Sunday. And if you haven't ordered those flowers or chocolates or whatever else you're going to do, you need to go ahead and get that situated right now. Don't wait till the last minute. Your mama's worth more than that. So, anyway, tonight, Lou Gardens, Crazy Rich Asians. So, you know, let's come to the outdoor movie. We'll be there. So have a blessed weekend. This is G's Power Hour. I never had so good entertainment. And please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
That it don't take much to build.